Hello, everybody. Ian here. Before we start the show, I just want to have a brief little message here. We've been coming along a lot these past 2 months, and I just want to say thank you to everybody who's been listening. We've been getting a lot of kind notices, and we all really appreciate that. But we want to keep pushing this podcast forward, making it better and better. If you're a fellow podcasters out listening, we want to cross-promote. We'd love to promote your podcast on ours and vice versa. And also, if there's anybody out there who'd like to be, we have two commercial break spaces, and we want to know if there's anybody out there who wants to sponsor our podcast. We'd greatly appreciate it. We don't know if we're ready for the big leagues yet. Maybe not like stamps.com or carrierpigeon.com. That I might have just made one of those up. But, you know, anything at all. On behalf of Nick, Cassie, and I, once again, we're all thankful for everybody who's listening. And let's get back to the show.
Coming at you from coast to coast, it's the Real Deal Podcast. Here are your hosts, Ian Phillips and Cassie Grimaldi.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Real Deal Podcast. Episode 10, to be precise. I don't know. Every time something has a zero at the end, it's worth a little celebration. So yeah. Thanks, everybody who's been listening. We've been doing this for 10 episodes. It's pretty cool.
That's yes, 10 weeks.
10 weeks. Anyway, my name is Ian 11. Phillips. Maybe 11, if we're lucky. My name is Ian Phillips. I write about movies. I talk about movies. I watch movies, review movies, all that stuff. I'm here, as always, with my co-host, Cassie Grimaldi. Hello, Cassie.
Hi, everybody. I'm Cassie, and I write about TV, and I talk about TV, and I watch movies, too. So, yeah.
So, are you ready to talk about movies and TV this week?
Yep. That's what we're doing here.
All right, we're gonna start off with a few news items this week. Mainly, we've got a lot of Star Wars news coming out. It's just started shooting. It's still in that early stage with a lot of speculation and cast shakeups. There was a big casting announcement this week. Cassie, you want to take that away?
Sure. So it was announced this week that Gwendolyn Christie and Lupita Nyong'o would be added to the cast of Star Wars Episode 7. So that's exciting, right? Representing
yes, that is
for the ladies.
Yes, I was going to say that's actually been a very big thing since they've been announced, that it's two women being cast and it was a big deal. Can you tell us why exactly people have been making such a big deal about that?
Been making a big deal about this because they're having one of the age-old stupidest arguments ever, which is whether there should be diversity quotas in movies. And I think this is a silly argument because it's silly. And I think Star Wars is an especially special case because I feel like it's being really built around the fact that so much information is coming out before it, and it feels like headline news every time they show a photo of a grain of sand from the set. But that being
breaking news, grain of sand.
Yeah, grain of sand. That being said, I think this is a stupid argument because you'll never know what sort of female characters they're going to represent until we see the movie, so it's really not even worth having this discussion until the movie comes out.
I guess, but we're kind of going to talk about it anyway, just because I think you bring up, I think there's a discussion to be had, and what a stupid discussion it is.
Yeah,
but
definitely.
I feel like there's kind of, in general, there's an underrepresentation of women in science fiction, both whether it be like the characters, and I think like there's, I can't really think of a lot of like women who have directed like major science fiction films that I can think of. Maybe I'm wrong if there's something I don't really remember.
Nothing really comes to mind majorly for me either, but I think in terms of women in science fiction, they tend to be objectified, at least in narratives, they tend to be objectified a lot and eroticized and made to be exotic. Like I think this is sort of a big deal because the last time J.J. Abrams tried to put more women in his movies, he cast Alice Eve, and he just had her there to sort of react to things and be pretty.
This is in Star Trek Into Darkness.
Yeah, and just show up in a bra and be titillating and not really be there for any reason.
If you haven't seen Star Trek Into Darkness, by the way, it is the most, that scene is like the most misplaced thing I've seen in many movies.
It's completely uncomfortable. So yeah, I don't know. I think a lot of people are sort of taking issue because this sort of feels like a calculated move on Disney's part. Like, they took care to sort of make it a new story, and I think that maybe has a grain of truth to it, but I think we're in an age where diversity is really hot button, and I think if any news has to come out of a movie, then I guess that's sort of good news, right?
I mean, you know how it is on the internet, just any little news item can be turned into a giant story if you talk about it enough.
Exactly.
But what do you, in general, like, we could still talk about it. I think that's, those are, like, two good choices. I especially want to, like, Lupita Nyong'o right now is having a career high point, given that she just won the Oscar. I think Gwendolyn Christie is a really awesome choice for a Jedi.
Yeah.
She's on, for everyone who doesn't know, she's on Game of Thrones. She plays a character named Brienne, who who's a knight.
Yeah, I don't remember if she's technically a knight on Game of Thrones, because I feel like I've heard her say, like, I'm not a knight or something. I don't know.
But she's a badass sword fighter.
She's really cool on Game of Thrones, and she's going to be in The Hunger Games, I think, right?
I think you're right.
Yeah, so she's just, like, this really cool lady who is cool and subverts traditional gender roles in movies and TV, hopefully more movies, because she's having a moment. And
yes, she is.
We just saw that on IMDb. She's sort of like top billed now, so that's pretty
good. Yeah, that's really awesome. She's top billed above Harrison Ford, Carrie Fisher, Mark Hamill.
Yeah.
All of that stuff. That's really cool. But we have another Star Trek news. I'm speaking of news being more. What did I say?
Star Trek.
Star Wars. That's what I meant. There's a big difference.
That's a cardinal sin.
Yes, I'm gonna be murdered by an army of fans later. So hopefully you guys just hold off. Let me finish recording this. Just don't hurt Nick and Cassie. But anyway, so there is a few photos that were leaked from the set this week. Most of them of these random monster type creatures, like Millennium Falcon, they're all in the desert. And it was just very weird, the reaction on the internet, which I've been observing closely, which is people both freaking out about the fact that these images were released and, like, they were supposed to be top secret and, like, why do we have to see anything? But at the same time, everybody analyzing, like Cassie said, oh, what does that grain of sand mean?
Yeah, exactly. And, I think people are just crazy and they ruin everything.
Yes,
the internet
that is
literally ruins everything, and the fact that it constantly needs to be filled up with stuff is disheartening. And I guess by filled up with stuff, I mean people commenting on it.
Yes.
Like, everybody has to write an op-ed about these photos and what do they mean, and they gotta post it to their blog. No offense to the Real Deal blog, but...
None taken.
I mean, like... It's just weird. Nothing is sacred. And
it
ruins everything.
There's just not very many secrets left anymore. Like, I was kind of... I remember there was, like, this whole Star Wars, like, when J.J. Abrams first directing it, like, there was so much secrets around the story and all of that, and I thought it would have been really awesome if they just continued throughout the entire production to not say anything, but it turns out that's not going to happen. I just, like, think about if you watch, like, older... I can't think of any off the top of my head, but if you watch, like, older trailers, like, something they like to do is, like, keep some of the mystery. I guess then again, when you're looking at Star Wars, like, what mystery is there? Like, we know this universe really well.
Yeah. I think... I don't know. I feel like... I didn't even look at all of the photos until, like, just now preparing for this podcast, but it makes it feel like... It makes the aesthetics and the ideas feel like they're going to be really tiresome by the time we get to this movie. And it's just going to be... it's not going to be, it's going to feel.
You're saying it's going to be over, it's going to be overhyped by the time it comes out?
It's going to feel like a labor to watch, because you're going to be like, yes. Oh, I remember when all this came out, and oh, how has this changed, and blah, blah, blah. It's not going to be, I'm afraid it's not going to feel like the fun Star Wars movie it should feel like.
And can you explain how come you think it's not going to be just because there's no surprise anymore? Or?
Yeah, it's just like they, it sort of removes the surprises and like the refreshment mm-hmm. you get in the
the
originality that J.J. Abrams might bring to it.
I mean, that's partly why so many sequels are getting made now, is because they're a safe property that everybody knows. It's like as if studios think that nobody wants to be surprised by movies anymore. I think that it will be kind of surprising just to see what J.J. Abrams and not George Lucas brings to Star Wars, because he definitely brought something. He brought something fresh to Star Trek, which brought it into the 21st century.
Yeah, definitely. And I think Star Wars in general is a more publicly accessible franchise, just because I feel like Star Trek was this huge thing with so much content that it's impossible to know really well. And I feel like since
it's true,
Star
I don't
Wars
know where
is
to
only
start.
Six movies, it's like a very targeted,
yes,
almost like concentration of devotion from the audience, if that makes sense.
It's very true. Star Trek is like kind of like an American Doctor Who, in that like there's so many different iterations of it that like you could ask any one person like where's the best place to start, and everyone will give you a different answer.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, definitely.
Yes, but now we're gonna have how many? We're gonna have three more Star Wars movies, and God knows they'll probably split at least one of them into two separate parts. Given that's how movies will be made, and then there'll be a mini trilogy within a trilogy within a trilogy. One day we're just gonna have like a trilogy that's just a Russian nesting doll of other trilogies.
Yeah, probably.
And it will be directed by Peter Jackson. You know, so that whole we live in a weird culture where there's both people who love to post spoilers and people who yell spoiler alert all the time, and they're constantly.
Which we do too. We're guilty of it.
Yes, we're guilty of it. We're part of it. It just I find it very odd. It's very bizarre. I always will find it like that.
Yeah.
But I would like to move on to something a little. We're talking about property that's existed for a long time. I'd like to talk about a more original idea when we move on to Analog This, where we talk about the biggest TV of the week. This week on HBO, we're not going to talk about Game of Thrones, believe it or not, shocker, but we're going to talk about season finale of Silicon Valley was this week. This is the first season. If you haven't watched it, this was the newest show by Mike Judge, who you might know better from Beavis and Butthead, King of the Hill, and Office Space. He's kind of a hero of mine, actually. I'm sure he is for you too, Cassie.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I don't know. I don't feel like I'm as big as a devoted fan. Don't put words in my mouth.
Sorry. I meant he's a great. He's awesome. But anyway, so he had a new show, which is basically a comedy about a startup trying to make it in Silicon Valley. And season one wrapped up. So we're going to talk about the finale and season one. So there might be some spoilers for both this season and the finale of Silicon Valley. So listen with caution. Anyway, Cassie, so season finale was this weekend. What did you think of it?
And the
season as a whole.
As a whole, I really loved Silicon Valley. As soon as I saw the trailer for it, I was really excited to watch it because it had Martin Starr in it, who I love dearly, since he played Bill Haverchuck on Freaks and
Geeks. Bill Haverchuck forever.
Yeah, forever. So, it was a really great series. I was always really excited to watch it every week. And what I liked about it the most was that I don't know anything about coding or building apps or design and programming.
Me neither.
And not that I felt like I did when the series was over, but I felt like it didn't matter that I didn't. I just needed to understand who these little weirdos were in this It just, like, immerses you in this world. Sort of like how if you watch a lot of political shows, you don't really need to know about politics. Yeah. You just need to know about the real things that are happening, yes. Which was refreshing.
Well, like, they introduced you to a lot of really complex ideas about coding, but, like, they would either explain it or they wouldn't make a really big deal out of it, so you wouldn't get completely lost in all of the jargon,
mm-hmm.
which was really nice. Like, this week, so they had this big, like, tech conference, which they were presenting at, and the company, which is called Pied Piper, which is a ridiculous idea, but the company's idea was this compression algorithm. Do you remember they had to, like, score on a certain scale? Do you remember, like, it was called? That this, like, very weird name?
Oh, I have no idea.
But anyway, like, it didn't make any sense to me at all, but, like, I think on a show like this, when you're dealing with technology, like, it's not necessarily about, like, what you know about the technology, it's about the stakes. The Wiseman scale, as our producer is reminding us.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's about, like, you knew what the stakes were and that they needed to succeed in a certain way, so that really helped.
Yeah.
And this was also...
I think they do a really good job of, like, in a world where everything is very, like...
In a world where everything is very
technologically abstract and beyond our comprehension, Mike Judge does a really good job of establishing stakes and
yes.
what these apps mean. Because it feels... One of the major themes of the show is that everybody has an app, and I think yes. that's a really good metaphor of
for what we are.
Maybe whatever you do, like now. For us, it's sort of like everybody has a blog, everybody has a podcast,
Yes, that's true. But not everybody has a great one of those things.
Yeah, that's true, and it's sort of. I feel like that was definitely one of the major themes of the show was how mm-hmm. do you set yourself apart and what makes you a unique individual, and I just thought that really carried throughout the series and more than just the app making. It was really funny.
Yes, it was. We should also talk about it was hilarious. Season one finale has this really elaborate dick joke in it, which I think it's gone viral by now for sure.
Yeah, it was on the front page of Reddit.
Yes, it was on the front page of Reddit, and you kind of have to see it to believe it. I can try and explain it, but like...
I know the math is correct. I definitely read that.
Is that so?
Yeah.
Yes. They basically do a giant equation that has to do with jerking a certain amount of people off. A certain amount of times. It's kind of like, it's jaw-dropping just how funny and like elaborate and well planned out it is. And it's like, it's so smart. I appreciate a smart dick joke. What can I say? A good fart joke, a good dick joke. They're few and far between. But I just want to ask... Yeah, that's what I'm saying there. But anyway, Cassie, I want to ask, like, what were some highlights from this season for you? Some of the best scenes, characters, things like that.
One of my favorite characters was Ehrlich, who was played by T.J. Miller.
Yes.
And he, one of my favorite episodes was when they're trying to find someone to design the logo for them.
Yes.
And they hired that is a great this, one. Like, scary Latino man who, like, does graffiti. And everybody sort of, they don't want, like, a lowercase letter in a box, which are obviously, like, the best logos and work for everyone.
Which looks like the Breaking Bad logo, kind of.
And he wanted a mural, and it's just, I won't describe it.
It's another gross joke, yes.
For those with delicate ears, but it just turned out so funny because everything, Ehrlich is just like that guy who thinks he knows what is cutting edge and like thinks he's mm-hmm. just the greatest, most enlightened person, and everything goes wrong for him, and I just think it's so funny.
And he's a really smart guy, and he looks like a complete slob, like, all the time. And I would say my favorite, my favorite character, but he was up there. He had some of the best moments was Zach Woods, who played Jared, who was like the guy who gets hired to basically like make their company legitimate and organize them. And then he's, like, at the beginning, he's very, like, uptight and stable. He dresses better than all of them. He doesn't really look like a Silicon Valley-type slob. But there's an episode
if
where
you don't know
he,
who Zach Woods is, he plays, he was Gabe on The Office, and he's also been on Veep, and,
He's really great. But there's one episode where he is attending a meeting, and he gets into a self-driving car to bring him there, and the self-driving car just completely turns against him, locks him in, and brings him into, like, a cargo ship that takes him into an island across the ocean that's being built by Peter Gregory, who is the investor, and the island is completely populated by only robots, and it's just a complete nightmare of, like, where you might think society is going. And I think that was also the moment when I realized this show was completely different. It was like how the show set itself apart, that it was way more than just its premise. It's so funny, and it says so much about our society today. But anyway, after that, he starts getting addicted to Adderall, and the last episode is him just, like, running around trying to get ideas for new ideas for a project, and it's insane.
Oh my god.
And you can just tell, like, he's become completely unhinged from his brain.
Yeah, it's great.
But also Thomas Middleditch, who's the lead actor.
He's so great at being weird and awkward and, like, making those, like, weird little noises.
It's very hard to have an awkward lead who's both, like, he's likable, and also, like, even though, like, they might have trouble, like, speaking full sentences, like, they can still get on board behind. And it's really hard not to root for Thomas Middleditch during this whole thing, and, like, half the show is really about his anxiety and his lack of sleep.
Yeah. I liked how well they highlighted somebody with, like, intense anxiety like that. I could relate to it. It was great.
Yes, I think anyone with anxiety could relate. And another great actor was Christopher Evan Welch, who plays Peter Gregory, who's the investor of the company and kind of this ridiculous visionary, like, just the way they paint everyone Silicon Valley. And unfortunately, he passed away this year, which is really too bad. He's for every episode he has, he's like, if you rewatch certain episodes, he gets funnier every single time. Like, he's not given any joke type lines, but his humor is very deadpan. It's just the way he reacts to things.
Yeah, one of my favorite episodes is when he was trying everything on the Burger King menu.
Oh, I forgot about that.
In the pilot, when they first go to see him speak at some conference, they were, like, telling the main character, Thomas Middleditch, was telling him how much he admires him, how much he wanted to, like, go to grad school or something to be like him, and he was like, don't go back to college, work at Burger King, do anything, don't. So, full circle there.
That's really great. Yes, full circle.
Wonderful. Yeah. He was a really great part of the show.
Yeah. I think this might be of, like, there's been a lot of really great new comedies on the air this year, and this might be my favorite one, because it just has a really sure idea of the world it's inhabiting just from, that sounds ridiculous, I know, for a comedy show, but that's just how I felt after just one season. And, like, I think this is the spot on satire we need of Silicon Valley and apps and just everything. Like, I feel like I was waiting for a show like this to come, and I didn't even realize it.
Yeah, me too. Yeah,
so we both love Silicon Valley, and if you haven't watched it yet, we hope we didn't spoil it for you too much if you didn't fast forward through this. But you should watch it. It's all on HBO Go now, and it's only 8 episodes, and I'm pretty sure it's been picked up for another season, which will come back, I'm not sure when, hopefully sooner as opposed to later.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that's the end of Analog This for now. We're going to take a very quick break, and we'll be right back to talk about some movies that came out.
Yeah!
Commercial! All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Real Deal Podcast. It is time now for Real Talk. That is when we look at what movies are out in theaters right now and give a little review. This week, instead of seeing one, Cassie and I both saw different movies, and we're going to congregate and talk about them now. First off, this week I went to go see Chef, which is a new movie that is written and directed by Jon Favreau. This is the first movie he's done since Cowboys and Aliens, and we know how that all turned out. But this is a bit of a career comeback for him, which is I'm really happy to see. I'm a big fan of Mr. Favreau. I love the first Iron Man movie and Swingers, and his part in I Love You Man is an underrated part in that movie. He's really funny in it. If you remember how good he was in that. The best part of that is when he's just talking about the piano in his house and how he's just like, I never play it. But anyway, I digress. So Chef is written and directed by Jon Favreau, starring Jon Favreau. It's a little back to basics, low budget. It's as indie as a movie starring Scarlett Johansson and Dustin Hoffman can get. But anyway, Jon Favreau plays a chef named Carl Casper, who's like a minor celebrity chef, very well known for the food he cooks, and he's stuck working in a really crappy restaurant. He's a really bad boss who's played by Dustin Hoffman, who for once is in the villain role. But anyway, one day he decides to quit his job because he doesn't have all the freedom he wants, and he starts his own food truck. So this is like the story of the rise and fall of a food truck. I like to say that Chef is what would happen if Twitter and the Food Network met and then had a baby. Because this movie is both a lot of food porn and a lot of shots of people tweeting. One of those things I'm okay with, one of them I'm not okay with. And it leads me to, like, it kept making me think about, like, the representation of modern, of, like, media in movies today, and I don't think they've really figured it out yet.
Yeah, they definitely haven't. What would you rather... Here's a confounding question for you. What would... Because I don't know how to answer it. What would you rather the means of communication and word spreading be in movies?
That's a good question. Well, one thing I remember in a screenwriting class I had, one assignment I had in this class was, like, one of the first scripts we had to write, one of the challenges was you cannot use any kind of, like, new media or technology in the script. No texting or Facebook. No one's communicating through Twitter or anything. And it was a big challenge, but I think it actually kind of yielded some good results, because I think that sometimes using technology for communication like that can be seen as a crutch. And more importantly, I think it might make Chef kind of dated in the future, because it might be like looking at, like, there's a lot of, like, really old 90s, like, comedies where out of nowhere there'd be, like, a giant rap number, and you look at and, like, probably back then it was really cool, and you look at it today and it just looks ridiculous. That's what I think of with Chef. But also, we were talking about Silicon Valley earlier, which is all about apps. Yeah. And I think the reason that show won't be dated is because everything they talk about is made up, and in this they use a real thing, Twitter.
Yeah. I think you're right. Sorry. Hang on.
No, it's okay. You go first.
Yeah, I think you're definitely right. I don't think... I mean, I didn't see Chef, but it's really annoying when... I think it could be entertaining sometimes when they, like, make up a social network for them to be using, or...
Yeah.
They, like, use... They build a world with it instead of, like, assuming that everybody knows what it is.
What it is. There's a great episode, or ridiculous episode, of Community this season where they have a new app that comes to campus.
With
where
Jim,
like,
and Eric.
Exactly, where everybody's just judged based on this app and the whole school turns into the Hunger Games. But I do really like when movies try, like, one part of this, like, the restaurant, the label that Jon Favreau has for himself, like, that's all fictional, and that was really cool. I just think they should have gone a little more creative with that. There's really long sequences where a 10-year-old kid is explaining to Jon Favreau what Vine is.
Ugh.
Yes, that's kind of, it's a little bit of an eye roll. at parts like that. But then there's some really good parts. Like, the whole cast has really good chemistry. John Favreau has good chemistry with everybody. Robert Downey Jr. has a brief cameo, and he obviously just did it as a favor to John Favreau, but he is a really funny part in it. It's worth seeing just for that. Then there's Bobby Cannavale and John Leguizamo. They're all good in it. Once again, it's really weird to see Dustin Hoffman as a villain. Another problem I have with the movie is that just in general, like, everything works out too nicely. I mean, I know you've seen it, Cassie. You haven't seen Chef yet, but you've seen all the trailers for it. Did you get a sense of any of those things when you saw the trailer?
I actually haven't seen a trailer for Chef.
Oh no, you have not. Oh, I should have checked my facts there. Well, it's okay, but just from knowing about the movie, would you get a sense of that?
I mean, I think I told you this earlier, like, I feel like I know exactly what to expect for this movie. I haven't even seen a trailer for it. I just, like, know about it because I follow Jon Favreau on Twitter, maybe.
Oh, wait, are you saying that Jon Favreau was using Twitter to promote a movie about Twitter?
Full circle.
Meta, total full circle. But, anyway, so, you know, that's, like, not, it's a feel, I went to go see this with my parents and they were both very happy. They said it's a feel-good movie and it really was. That's a good movie for the summer. And I don't think feel good is a bad thing. Sometimes too much feel good is a little too much. You need to live in a world where you can also expect that not everything's going to work out. I won't spoil anything. You can just see for yourself. But it's kind of weird to say because I've been saying a lot more bad than good about this movie, but I can still want to recommend it to people. It was still, while I was watching it, I was entertained throughout. It's never boring.
That's good.
You see a lot of shots of, like, pork and grilled cheese sandwiches getting made. Yes, so it looks very appetizing. I like pork. John Favreau is in a love triangle with Sofia Vergara and Scarlett Johansson, which is an interesting idea. I'm not the first one to say that, but
that's spelled PFT. Because
poofed. Because it is kind of ridiculous.
Yep.
But anyway, Chef is out in theaters right now. It started off in select theaters and has expanded. It's nice to see that Jon Favreau is doing a project that he seems really passionate about and something that allows him to explore actual characters and stuff like that. So even with tweets aside, I like Chef. Anyway, Cassie. This week, I did not see, but you went to go see Maleficent, am I right?
I did, and Ian refused to see this movie, so I had to go on my own.
I will just say that I actually saw trailers for it, and it looked like a sequel to Alice in Wonderland, Tim Burton's Alice in Wonderland, which was a total fucking disaster.
Well,
and I don't know if you liked it or not, but to me that was one of the most disappointing movies I'd seen, like, that year when it came out.
I didn't like Alice in Wonderland, but I didn't get the same feeling from the trailers for Maleficent at all.
Maybe not the story, but it was just the look of it. But why don't you walk us through Maleficent, tell us what it's about.
Okay,
all of that.
So Maleficent's sort of like, it's not really a prequel to Sleeping Beauty, because it, I guess it's like sort of a prologue, and it happens simultaneously to Sleeping Beauty, but Maleficent is this fairy, and she lives in the woods, and the woods are adjacent to a kingdom of humans who are greedy and live miserable lives in comparison.
Sounds like Noah.
To the democratic harmony of the woods, or I guess in the movie it's called the moors. And so one day this human boy is exploring the moors and Maleficent meets him and they become friends and they start to like each other. And his name is Stefan.
Yes.
Whatever you want to call him. But
Is Maleficent, like, is she portrayed as she's the protagonist of the story, but is she portrayed as being overly good or bad?
I'll get to it.
Okay, alright,
I'll
get to it.
She's good. And so she and Stefan, their friendship turns into something more, and they like each other, and he tells her he loves her, but
he really doesn't mean that because boys suck, which is also a major theme of this movie. And
wow.
Which and, so she they go, where was I? Oh, he tells her he loves her.
So
boys suck. Okay. So years go by and she doesn't see Stefan, and suddenly the king who's ruling over the kingdom decides, I want the Moors, let's go conquer them, which sort of comes out of nowhere, but that's okay. And because this isn't really about the military plot. But
we're getting into it though.
But yeah, so, and then Maleficent defends it from him, and the king is like, ugh, Maleficent, hater.
Does the king actually say, ugh?
No.
If I wrote this movie,
he would have.
If I would go see a version of Maleficent where a king just goes, ugh, haters.
I hate her. So, he hates her. King's on his deathbed. He's like, my last dying wish is for someone to kill this fairy. So I can take over the Moors. And so Stefan.
Stefan. This is not Stefan from Saturday Night Live. I wish it was too.
It's definitely Stefan, but I'm going to continue to say Stefan.
You keep describing versions of Maleficent that I would so much rather see.
Okay, so Stefan is like really ambitious, and he's had a horrible life, and so he wants to be the king, and so he decides to take it upon himself to go into the woods to kill Maleficent. So he tricks her, and he's like, Maleficent, it's been so long, I love you, and they have like a little picnic, but he drugs her and makes her fall asleep, and he's about to kill her, but he can't do it, and so instead he cuts off her wings.
Oh, no.
That dick. And so this results in a blood-curdling scream from the remarkable Angelina Jolie. And Stefan becomes king. And yeah, so Maleficent's super jaded and angry. And she sort of starts wearing more black and wearing red lipstick. A little more. And yeah, she makes this crown for herself.
So this is an origin story about how Maleficent became evil.
Because boys suck. That's Maleficent's origin story.
That's the moral story. Now, but
this is the first 15 minutes of the movie.
That's 15 minutes?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
That's a very busy 15 minutes.
I know. Okay, so then
you don't have to tell us how it ends, though, so we don't have to put the spoiler tag on. But yes, of course you do.
Okay, so Stefan becomes king, marries this blonde lady, has a baby. Maleficent hears about this shit, and so she's like, no, I'm gonna get him back for ruining my life, which he did, so she has to get him back. And so she goes to the castle, puts a curse on the baby, who is Princess Aurora. And if you've seen Sleeping Beauty, it's a really cool, almost exact replica of the scene where she does put a curse on Sleeping Beauty, which was really cool. And the curse is that before the sun sets on her 16th birthday, she'll prick her finger on a spinning wheel and fall into a sleep like death. So, yeah, I've memorized that.
It's totally fine.
That happens. Along the way, she saves this crow's life because Maleficent loves nature and she hates men, so she saves it from a hunter and she transforms it into a man, and she continues to transform him into whatever she needs, and he's like sort of this great character.
Boy issues.
Yeah. So yeah, he's great. But what really Maleficent is about how the three fairies, if you've seen Sleeping Beauty, to prevent her from pricking of her finger, the king sends her to live with three fairies in a cottage in the woods. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of bumbling idiots, so Maleficent sees them being bumbling idiots, and she decides
she doesn't decide to. She just feels obligated to take care of Aurora. Like, she saves her from falling off a cliff, and she feeds her because the three fairies always forget to feed her. And they sort of... And so she grows up, and they form this great bond, and Princess Aurora, like, thinks that Maleficent's her fairy godmother because she's always been nice to her. And it's just, like, kind of sweet because Maleficent's sort of resistant, but you can tell she's really fond of her. And one day she decides she wants to take back the sleeping curse, but she can't do it because her own magic was too strong. Whoops.
Oh no.
Spoiler alert, sorry.
Oh, oops. Was that the end or was that 20 minutes in?
The end.
Okay.
So I guess I'll go into spoilers now, but yeah, the moral of the story is that the true love's kiss that wakes her up is Maleficent's, not the prince, like everybody thought. So yeah, sorry, that was
so
such
what
a long-winded description.
But it's okay. It was very entertaining and filled with possible Saturday Night Live references, which I appreciate. But overall, did you what did you think of Maleficent? And did you think that there was a reason for Disney to make a Sleeping Beauty prequel?
You know what? The more I think about it, the more I like it. Because I think that there are reasons for Disney to make prequels and to restructure their fairy tales. Because most of them are terrible and send really horrible messages to the audiences. Watch them.
Are you saying most of the prequels are terrible or the originals are terrible?
Not that they're terrible movies. They send really terrible messages and complicated messages that are confusing and misleading. And in every aspect. And so I think one of the things I liked the most about this movie, though, when I was leaving, I was like, there was, like, these little girls in front of me, and they were like, that was the best movie ever! And it was, like, really... it was cute. Like, watching this movie in a theater full of children was kind of cute and nice.
That's always an interesting experience. And how was Angelina Jolie?
She was actually really good in it, I thought. She, The movie itself could have been a little more complicated. Like, it was, like, there was a fairy tale voiceover and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And But yeah, she's the highest paid actress in the world, I think.
Is she?
Fact check that, Producer Nick.
Fact check.
But I think people always forget about what a good actress she is because she has this very public persona. So
doing good things, by the way.
Yeah, and she does good things, and people are just like, ugh, I feel like they're very dismissive of Angelina Jolie, and they shouldn't be, because there's, like, this very constructed idea of her. But anyway...
And by the way, that's true. She is the highest paid actress in the world.
Yeah. Okay.
Which is awesome for her.
So, I don't know. And then, the more I think about it, the more I like it. And I was reading this critique about the movie, and it was like it had the same ending as Frozen, and I was like, really, really, movie critic, because every Disney princess movie had all 10 of them had the same ending for the last 70 years.
Would you call this a Disney princess movie?
No, I would call it a Disney movie, but
yeah, it is definitely a Disney movie.
I really like the change it made, and it's really cool, because I was writing earlier today about how Marvel is really, which is owned by Disney, is
taking... Disney owns everything.
Yeah, is,
and Star Wars.
Is really rigid about making things fit into its universe, and I really liked that Disney, as Disney, as fairy tale Disney, is sort of subverting that, and allowing for different versions of stories to be told, and like allowing for the fact that Happily Ever After can mean a lot of different things. And fairy tales are really interesting. I don't know if you've ever seen the musical Into the Woods, but
I saw a version of it at camp, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, one of my favorite things
put on by 12-year-olds, but sorry, keep going.
One of my favorite things about it is at the end of the act one is that I forget the name of the song, this is embarrassing, but
I can't remember either.
All about how it's the end of act one is the happily ever after, and act two is no, it's not. There's still things we want. Life goes on after.
Happily ever after.
So,
that's such a great idea. It's like Shrek.
It's a very smart idea, and
yes,
I think that Disney is doing not the best job, but a better job of letting their children audiences know that.
So they're
I think that's really important.
They're taking the idea also of like a gritty reimagining and actually doing something worthwhile with it, it seems.
It wasn't gritty. Like,
I mean, not gritty, but dark. Just gritty is a stupid word.
Was definitely kid friendly. I think it wasn't. It was definitely for like an audience of like 8-year-olds, not like 15-year-olds. I don't know. It wasn't dark. It was definitely like fun. It was really.
That's good.
It was probably one of the most fun movies I've watched recently, and it was.
That's nice.
I mean, it wasn't great. It was.
Yeah.
A lot of it felt like a little hollow, but I mean, it was only 1 hour and 30 minutes, and that was awesome.
Oh, that's. And 30 minutes is like, I don't know what to say, but like an
it's
hour.
Bliss.
Like, what's the word I'm looking for? 1 hour and 30 minutes is bliss. It's like you don't. It's like a breath of fresh air.
Exactly.
When today's movies are usually 2.5 hours long.
There was no reason for this movie to be dragged out over 2 hours. And
I love when a movie knows when to exit. It knows when it's done.
Yeah. The final battle sequence was really cool. I would say it was probably
good.
Even less terrifying than the original Sleeping Beauty, which is really scary, I always thought. But,
oh,
yeah.
Wow. But, you know, you've actually put a pretty convincing argument for this movie. I sometimes can be annoyed by prequels that don't feel necessary, but I'm actually a huge fan of, like, world building, and I really like the idea that they keep it up with this, and I might go check this out, actually.
I kind of wish I saw it on a bigger screen than... I saw it in, like, one of the worst theaters in my town, and, like, I was really far away from the screen on, like, a flat floor in an uncomfortable chair, but I still enjoyed myself, so...
Yeah, I'm bummed I couldn't see Chef in IMAX 3D.
Yeah.
Could've used some 3D brisket.
Yeah.
But that's just the interesting thing you're pointing out there. Cause it's really, what's the word I'm looking like? It's just very interesting now how much, I'm sorry, our producer just sent us a very funny message, but, it's really interesting now how much, the screen experience impacts the movie, because there's so many different screen options from iPad to flat screen TV to regular movie theater to IMAX 3D. When I told people I didn't like Godzilla, most of their reaction was, oh, you should have seen it in IMAX. Like, suddenly that would have made the story better and the monster pop out more times. I'm not saying that's true. I'm just saying I think that's interesting, like, how many screen options we have now.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I don't know. I don't know. This definitely would have looked awesome on IMAX. And I think there's certain CGI things and frame rates and like blah 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 and digital blah whatever things that I don't understand that definitely look better in IMAX 3D. Like the first Hobbit movie looks terrible if you see it in a normal theater, but it looks good in IMAX.
I saw the Desolation of Smog in 2D, and there's a scene where they're rolling. Did you see Desolation of Smog?
Yeah, I did.
There's a scene, do you remember the scene where they're like rolling in barrels down the river?
Yeah.
If you see that in 2D, it just looks like it looks like security footage from like a Six Flags ride.
Yeah,
like it looked really awful. And like like, not everybody's going to, like, how do movies have an afterlife now if you're only supposed to see it in 3D? Not everybody has a 3D TV or an iPad that turns 3D, which doesn't really exist, but...
Yeah, I don't know. They have that new TV that just came out that has, sort of the convex, or concave, Convex would be, like, an old TV. I'm dumb. But it has, like, the concave, arc, like an IMAX screen, but...
Yeah. I did actually see a 3D TV in a store once, and it was actually pretty awesome. Sony Curved. That's what it's called, a Sony Curved. Was the TV that Cassie was describing?
Yeah,
Soon enough you'll have your. Yes, that's the part that you picked up on, of course.
Yeah.
But yeah, soon enough we'll just be able to just watch movies in our home and never have to leave, and just more excuses to be lazy.
Yeah, like the movie WALL-E.
Yes, WALL-E is a prophecy that will come true one day. Yep. But anyway, overall, so Cassie, you would recommend Maleficent to people.
Yeah.
I'm just curious, based on what I said, would you go see Chef in theaters?
I would watch it on Netflix.
Okay, so that's one you could watch on Netflix. That is one you could definitely watch on any screen.
Mm-hmm. Ian?
Okay. Yeah. Sorry.
Would you go see Maleficent?
As I was kind of saying before, I actually had zero desire to see this. Like, not that it was terrible in any way, but just I looked at it and some part of my brain just immediately felt turned off by it. But based on how you described it, I am kind of interested to see how they take an old fairy tale and spin it around. I actually remember, I think in elementary school, being read a book that was basically the tale of the three little pigs told from the perspective of the big bad wolf. Mm-hmm. And they made him seem like the good guy.
Oh my god.
And do you know exactly, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, but I also have, I know that book exactly, but there's also this show that Jim Henson had in like the 80s and 90s, and there's a version of that story that stars Jeff Goldblum as the big bad wolf, so you should watch.
What? Why? I feel like I've been lied to. This has been withheld from me all of my life. Can you please... Do you know what the name of the show is?
It's called The Storyteller. It used to be on Netflix, but,
Oh. Okay, so it's The Storyteller. It's Jim Henson. I'm just also letting our audience know that there is a version... That in this world, something exists where Jeff Goldblum plays the big bad wolf.
Yeah.
This is very important to me.
Yeah.
Okay, anyway... America. Yes, I'm going to go check The Storyteller out, and I think I'll go see Maleficent.
Okay.
And I'll report back on it if and when I do see it.
I think he's going to go see it.
I don't know, we'll see. I like to talk softly, too. Anyway, that that wraps up Real Talk for the week. We're going to take a very quick commercial break, and we'll be right back, so stay tuned. Welcome back to the Real Deal Podcast, everyone. As always, before we go, we're going to do a little question of the week, a little survey based on what's going on in film news this week. I decided for a question of the week, based on Maleficent, which took a well-known villain and gave her her own movie, what villain, famous villain, do you think deserves their own spinoff? We want your answer, but of course we're going to answer it too. If I would choose, this is kind of a really tricky one. I actually think that sometimes, like in certain movies, the villain can be even more interesting than the hero. Just like look at The Dark Knight. But, if I was to choose to give a villain their own movie, I would take Anton Chigurh from No Country for Old Men. That was, Javier Bardem's Oscar-winning portrayal. And that's kind of hard because the villain is almost the main character there. But I still want to see his own movie because I still, like, the point is I have no idea what that character is, whether or not he is the Grim Reaper or just a man, like, what he's made of. I think what's scariest about him is how little we know about him, but I could totally go for another movie that's him just wandering across the desert, like, giving people what he thinks they deserve. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Cassie, what villain would you choose that deserves their own movie?
Well, that's a really good one, but I'll see that, and I'll raise you two words. And they're Lord Voldemort from Harry Potter.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Remember when Tom Riddle was in the Chamber of Secrets?
That was so interesting. It was very interesting.
I want to know all about Tom Marvolo Riddle and all the stuff he had going on. And there's a lot in the books, but I want to know more.
Yes, we always do want to know more. Maybe we could get J.K. Rowling on the phone there.
Mm-hmm. Call her up, producer
so
Nick.
I'm very bad with Harry. Okay, I'm really bad with Harry Potter. But I know a lot. I did see the Chamber. Yeah, I know. It's one of my biggest pop culture offenses. I have seen the Chamber of Secrets, and I know that, I guess, spoiler alert, but not really, that Tom Riddle is Lord Voldemort. But are you saying that this prequel would be about Tom Riddle, or would it be about Voldemort as portrayed by Ralph Fiennes?
Well, nobody wants to see the latter, so, because Ralph Fiennes is just, he's a creepy dude, unless he's in a Wes Anderson movie. So,
yes, he's he's creepy as Lord Voldemort.
I want to see the whole ring. I want 7 movies just about Voldemort.
Oh, that would be pretty interesting. I'd get on board for that.
Yeah.
And I think most people would. But those are our choices. What villain would you like to be seen given their own movie? If you'd like to chime in, just send an email at Ian, IAN, at real, R-E-E-L, dealblog.com. And if we get some interesting answers, we'll read them on the show and talk about them. So,
we already have one answer chiming in. Producer Nick says Mantooth from the movie Anchorman.
That's Wes Mantooth as played by Vince Vaughn. He loves his mother, Dorothy Mantooth, if you remember that.
Yeah, she's a saint.
Yes, Dorothy Mantooth is a saint. You do not say anything bad about Dorothy Mantooth. I do love that answer, though. Thank you. Thank you, Nick. Yes, maybe one day we'll also get a movie based on Adam Scott's character from Step Brothers. I would 100% watch that as well.
He can sing high like this.
He can sing high. I can't believe I just did that. I don't think Nick is going to cut that out. And he probably shouldn't. But all right. Nick says never. He's never going to cut that out. But anyway, that brings us to the end of our show. I'm so sorry you had to hear me sing. That was not something I ever intended. It was in the moment, living in the moment, you know. So anyway, while we have to go away for now, this is not the only place you can find us. Cassie, where can our listeners find you this week?
Well, you can follow me on Twitter at Cassie Grimaldi, and you can find some of my writing on the website Screen Robot.
That's great. We'll look out for that. For me, you can find me as always at realdealblog.com, R-E-E-L, dealblog.com. And you can follow me on Twitter, where I have a new Twitter handle now, and that's Ian, and it's at Ian Real Deal. So just Ian Real Deal, no more of that Ian0592 nonsense. So just follow at Ian Real Deal, and you'll get updates for the Real Deal as well as my own life. And in terms of both of Cassie, in terms of this podcast, you can find all the episodes either on the website, realdealblog.com, or you can download them on iTunes as well. We recently put up our review of X-Men Days of Future Past, which was where Professor Comics Mike Rogers joined us. And we have some exciting new ones coming up. Stay tuned. We're going to do another classics exchange where Cassie got me to watch 10 Things I Hate About You.
Yeah, an important moment in any boy's life.
Yes, apparently it is. And stay tuned for next week where we will have a review of The Fault in Our Stars. Anyway, thank you everybody for listening. And as always, 3, 2, 1, keep it real.
Keep it real.
Wait, that was not the, hold on, one more time, the same time, all right? We'll do 1, 2, 3 instead of 3, 2, 1. Maybe that threw you off your game. 1, 2, 3.
Keep it real.
Keep it real. Keep it real. I think we nailed it, guys. Keep it real.
Keep it.
Keep it real.
Really.
Wait.
Keep it
the real.